Chapter 3, April 1817. It was a great source of pride to John Segundus that he had been even tangentially involved in the advancement of magic from purely theoretical historical research to applied study, and for its continued journey on that path. It was not pride in himself, but pride in magic. It was now a discipline with the future, and Segundus was intent to see as much of that future as he could. He was not so old, although he was certainly not as young as he once was, he readily admitted to himself, and he had a great many years of work still in him. He had seen other men and boys he had known take up seemingly God-given talents as either hobbies or careers. Writing, shooting, art, the command of men. Segundus had taken naturally to books and to thinking as a child, and it was a love that had stayed with him. Only in the last few weeks had he realized that another of his natural talents was magic. It was a raw and unfocused talent, yes, but when Childermas had talked to him about their shared sensitivity to magic and the rarity of such an ability, his heart had soared with promise, almost as it had when he had managed to reattach Lady Pole's finger. So he sat down in his study and slowly expanded his talent at scholarship to include practice. It had taken him a while to harness the magic that now filled England to his own will, without the pressure of an enchanted lady before him and Childermas breathing down his neck, but he had managed it. The first piece of magic he had done after that chaotic morning in February was to warm a bowl of water. It had been around a week later, and he had slept in tremendously late. This had been happening a lot since Lady Pole had taken residence, and he supposed the constant exposure to such strong, malevolent magic had drained him somewhat. He had found he was waking a little earlier every day, having, much to his embarrassment, woken after noon, the day following all the excitement. On the morning in question, he had risen to find Charles had slipped into his room while he was asleep and left a basin and jug of water for him. That had been hours ago, Segundus had supposed, as the water was ice cold when he woke. He had stared at the cold water, not relishing the idea of washing with it, and then thought he had nothing to lose by trying. He had read a little of it in a tattered excerpt of Pevensey that had turned up one morning by way of Mrs. Lennox, and needed nothing more than a short incantation and a remnant of heat. He had taken up a piece of burnt coal, not yet turned to ash, from the cold fire, and set it in the water. He pleaded with it to remember its warmth, to bring out the heat from its own memory, and impart it to the water. Once he had said his piece, he had opened his eyes and looked intently down at the bowl. Just as he had been about to give it up as a loss, the bowl had started to steam gently. He dipped his fingers into the bowl and found it just a little too hot to wash with, but that was no matter. He let out a cry of joy that was so uncharacteristic that Charles was in his room a moment later to make sure he was not injured. It had been such a relief to Segundus that his magic had not been a singular phenomenon that he had spent the rest of the day taking his piece of coal from room to room and warming other things throughout the house, until Mrs. White had shooed him from the kitchen while letting him know in no uncertain terms that she was perfectly capable of looking after her own ovens. In the months that had passed, Segundus's study had become a little more cluttered. There were basins and orbs and all sorts of contraptions not so easy to name, resting on the sideboard and shelves and hanging from the walls. In short, his study had started to somewhat resemble a laboratory. Above the fireplace, beside the mirror, he had hung the cross he had made from ribbon, spoon, and bodkin to restore Lady Pole. In moments of frustration and failure, he found that looking at it helped to restore his faith in his own abilities, made his spine straighten where he sat. One gloomy morning in April, he was sitting at his desk, frowning over his alterations to Strange's location and surveillance spell. He had sent Davy out to wherever he pleased as long as he did not tell Segundus where he planned to go, and was trying to locate him using magic. He recalled Strange's complaints about not being able to find a person or a thing with the spell, only to narrow down, which involved having some clue as to where that person or thing was in the first place, or to have to guess from landmarks and basin visions. Segundus was not having much success, and was rather glad of the distraction of the approaching sound of hooves on the road. He was downstairs before the knock came at the door, and he opened it himself. "Mr. Childermas!" Segundus cried upon seeing the figure on the other side of the threshold. "What a pleasant surprise!" He was, indeed, very pleased to see Childermas. If there was any man to help him in his current endeavor, then it was he. He smiled and ushered him into the hall. "Good morning, Mr. Segundus. I met Davy at the Thorn Inn at Ripon," said Childermas as he entered, removing his hat and gloves. "He said you had sent him away. I hope you have not quarreled." "Oh," Segundus cried, "I wish you had not told me that." He sighed in exasperation and stalked back to his study. Childermas followed, pausing only to hand Charles his coat and hat. "I'm not sure why you would have quarreled with Davy," Childermas continued, something approaching perplexion in his tone. Neither of you have ever seemed much inclined to it. We have not quarreled, sighed Segundus. You have misunderstood him. He shut the door behind Childermas and waved at the basin on his desk. I was attempting a spell. I merely asked him to travel somewhere beyond Staircross, near or far, without telling me where he was going, so that I might try to locate him. Childermas's eyes sparked in interest. Are you using Ormskirk? No, Pevensey. Segundus sighed, dropping into his chair. And some of Strange's refinements, but nothing seems to be working. I cannot seem to get the spell to focus on the subject while also indicating the location. Childermas stood by Segundus's side and leaned over to peer into the bowl. He muttered a few words, and a vision of Davy laughing with some men in an inn floated just below the surface on the water. You see, Segundus explained, standing beside Childermas and pointing at the image. I can either bring up this image of him at the current moment, or I can quarter the basin to narrow down his location. I cannot, however, seem to combine the two spells, which would clearly be the most useful form of it. To be able to see the subject while also knowing precisely where he is. He rubbed his face. I was thinking of Mrs. Strange. Had they thought her lost in the hills, and all the poor souls who become lost each year we might be able to locate before it is too late, rather than spending hours narrowing down locations in the four quarters. I see the purpose, and the difficulty, said Childermas, his face a frown of concentration. Standing so close, Segundus could smell Brewer on him, warm and a little sweet, with a tang of leather. Have you an atlas? Asked he, cutting his eyes across to Segundus. It was several hours before the two men emerged from the study, and only at the appearance of Charles to remind them of dinner. They had made some improvements to the spell and done some damage to the atlas, but Segundus felt more optimistic than he had that morning. I must apologize, Mr. Childermas, he said as they sat down at the table. I'm sure you came on some other business, and here I am stealing away your day in pursuit of my own studies. It is no worry of mine, Mr. Segundus, answered Childermas, giving him an amused look. They are refinements I had been trying to make myself when time allows. What brings you to Staircross today? He was glad that Childermas did not seem put out by only now being asked what Segundus should have inquired about upon his arrival. Oh, nothing more than a feeling. Childermas's eyes twinkled with a private joke as he took a drink of water, regarding Segundus over the rim. It seems, sir, he said at length, once Charles had set his meal in front of him, that you keep turning up in my cards. I beg your pardon? I am in the habit of asking them for guidance when I feel at a crossroads or at a loose end. This was not surprising to Segundus, but what Childermas said next was. They keep directing me here. More specifically, they keep directing me to you. Segundus remembered Childermas's lesson, his own life spread out on a carriage bench in ragged cardboard. He saw the Knight of Cups and thought of it appearing time and again in Childermas's hand. The thought of it brought color to his cheeks, and he looked down at his plate. Some might call it rude to so consistently show up in a man's fate, Childermas said, his long, uneven smile curling at his mouth, pulling Segundus from his thoughts. But, he continued with a shrug, perhaps they brought me here in order for us to work on the spell. Perhaps we will make some kind of breakthrough with the king's letters. Perhaps I did not realize I would take such a notion for onion soup. He gestured at the plate in front of him. Whatever the reason, I'm happy to let them direct me in this manner. Segundus doubted Childermas's honesty in this. He knew how busy the man was, how many meetings he generally had with societies and ministers and Johannites alike, the amount of correspondence he had to keep up with, a deal of which now arrived for him at Staircross as the place was coming to act as a base of sorts for him. But all Segundus found to say was, Mrs. White does make an excellent onion soup. Childermas smiled at this and tilted his glass toward Segundus in a lazy toast to Mrs. White's soup. After dinner, Segundus brought Childermas to the library, where the fire had been lit and brandy put out. He was dwelling on the fate of the Atlas, and would rather not confront its remains in his study so soon. I thought, while you are here, that I might elicit your opinion. I am afraid it is nowhere near as grand or well-stocked as Hurtfuse, but I feel it is well along the way to being quite adequate for its purpose, given the difficulties presented. He quieted himself as he glanced around the room, suddenly remembering that he was speaking to the agent chiefly responsible for said difficulties. Childermas merely raised an eyebrow and smiled a knowing smile, then took a turn about the room, his hands loosely clasped behind his back as he perused the titles, occasionally pulling a book from the shelf and flicking through it. Segunda stood watching him, following his progress around the room with agitation rising within him as Childermas's silent inspection continued. "A more varied selection than I expected," Childermas eventually said, having taken the measure of the room and investigated to his satisfaction. "But an impressive collection so far, in spite of the difficulties." "Oh," Segundus exclaimed, brightening. "I hope that Staircross will not only be a place for the teaching of magic, but for all other subjects a student may need. During my last visit to London, I was very grateful for having Mrs. Lennox's carriage, as I fear I brought away half of Mr. Lackington's stock." His lips pressed together as he regarded Childermas's profile, impassively considering Pointer's irrational account of the weather. "Mr. Norrell would undoubtedly look badly on me for frequenting such an establishment, I suppose." Childermas only smiled curiously at him and returned the book to its place before taking a seat in one of the armchairs before the fire. "It never seemed necessary for Mr. Norrell to hear all the details of the origins of some of his books. As long as he obtained the volumes he required, he did not care about the particular methods that brought them to him." This statement should not have stirred Segundus's imagination as it did, but combined with Childermas's dark and looming appearance and the unseasonable murk of the evening, he could not help but envisage some dramatic highway pursuit. He sternly reminded himself that the particular methods he had heard from Strange's pupils had mainly involved checkbooks and outbidding, and very little use of pistols or galloping horses. He had got himself so caught up in the image that he missed Childermas's next words. "Pardon?" "I said, sir, you have enough Sutton Groves to be getting on with." "Oh, yes," Segundus exclaimed, glad for the diversion. "I had my own copy. It seems there were a number of them available, reprinted, as Lord Portishead so well put forward Mr. Norrell's opinion of its value. I had a most lively discussion of it with Mr. Knight and Mr. Fotheringill in London."
"And what is your opinion of it, Mr. Segundus?"
"It is a useful text for certain occasions. I can understand why Mr. Norrell was such an admirer of it, and why Mr. Strange found it frustrating." He poured them each a glass of brandy, passing one to Childermas.
"A diplomatic answer."
Childermas was smiling at him again, a glimmer of humor in his eye.
"But not truly an answer. Come, sir, you are not generally in the habit of being guarded about your own opinions. It would be a shame to start now."
Segundus laughed a little at being caught out. "He tabulates English magic in a useful way for my current purposes. I shall not argue with him on that account. But I feel that if his had been the first account of English magic I had ever found, then I would not be sitting here speaking with you this evening. How does that suit you as an answer, sir?" He saw the glint of teeth in Childermas's smile, heard the scrape of a chuckle in his throat.
"And what is your opinion, Mr. Childermas?"
The chuckle grew to a true, if short, laugh.
"I sometimes have difficulty sleeping," Childermas said at length. "I usually find that half an hour with Sutton Grove is more effective than a half pint of brandy."
The laugh leapt from Segundus's mouth before he even thought it, although the ones that followed it into the firelight were not so much of a surprise. They spent a pleasant hour discussing various recent publications which were rather more engaging than Sutton Grove, and the conversation turned to Mr. Knight and his school in Covent Garden. "He intends to teach purely theoretical magic," Segundus explained. "Although Mr. Fothergill wishes to teach a little practical magic in Canterbury, we have decided to meet together twice a year."
"It will be good for English magic to have such schools," Childermas said, sipping his brandy. "And even better for there to be communication and agreement between the masters."
"I did not have the opportunity to say as much in London," Segundus says, "and did not know where a letter might reach you, but I wish to thank you for your help, Mr. Childermas, for your introductions, for your directions and letters. They have been indispensable in setting up such communications." Childermas gave a huff.
"No need, Mr. Segundus."
"You needn't do all of this for me," said Segundus, swirling the brandy in his glass. "I know how busy you are."
"I am not doing it for you, Mr. Segundus," answered Childermas, a peculiar glint in his eye, which, in flicker of the firelight, made him look more like one of Mrs. Radcliffe's characters than usual.
Segundus was once more caught up in the images of Childermas's particular methods his mind had provided him earlier, but he schooled himself sternly away from those.
"I am doing it for English magic, for the cause we both champion. Making the introductions was selfish on my part. It gives me one less thing to worry on, knowing you have it in hand."
Of course, it just seemed, when you arrived at Fife House..." Segundus was unsure how to finish without giving further offense, so he allowed himself to trail off and take another drink.
His head was beginning to feel pleasantly light, but whether that was due to the brandy or to the curious effect of knowing he had Childermas's trust, he was unsure. He noticed that, when the fire flared at its brightest, it illuminated a similar shade in Childermas's eyes as in the brandy. "I happened to be passing, so thought I would call in the chance it was still going. I have known those gentlemen to argue about things a great deal less important for a great while longer." He looked as though he would say more, but instead gave a shrug and took a sip of his own drink. It was a few minutes before he spoke again. "You said, sir..." Childermas's voice was slow, careful. "That you considered us colleagues. I would hope that holds true." Segundus looked up. Childermas's face was half hidden in shadow and behind hair, but his dark eyes glittered in the light from the fire. There was an unfamiliar vulnerability about him in that moment, a twist to his mouth that indicated that Segundus's answer would mean more than he wished it would. It reminded him in some obscure way of how Childermas had been on the afternoon of the 15th of February, touching the silvery scar on his cheek, which should, by all means, have still been bleeding. Segundus weighed his answer and settled on the truth, unornamented. "Nothing would please me more." The twist of Childermas's mouth resolved itself into its usual sideways smile. He raised his glass. "To unlikely partnerships," said he, and Segundus laughed and moved to tilt their drinks together. "I would not have thought it when you first showed up on the steps of Staircross," said Segundus, feeling warm and merry and content. "But there is no man I would trust more in this venture."
"Not even Mr. Honeyfoot?"
The teasing in Childermas's tone was obvious, but Segundus found he could not be too irritated. "Now, Mr. Honeyfoot is a dear friend, my dearest, in fact, but you know this business, sir. You have been all your life in it. Magic, for him, cannot be his chief concern. A very serious and pleasant one, yes, but he has his family to think of. For you and me, magic is, as I said to the minister, it is our lives."
"Just so, Mr. Segundus." Childermas nodded and finished his brandy. "The hour is late," he said, putting his glass down and bringing his hands to the arms of his chair, ready to push himself to his feet. "I had best leave you some peace. The heart is not far." It took Segundus a moment to realize what he meant. The White Hart Inn, some 5 miles south of Staircross.
"That will not do, Mr. Childermas," he exclaimed as Childermas stood.
The man merely looked down at him curiously. Segundus waved towards the empty chair.
"Your room has been readied for you. I could not abide the thought of you staying elsewhere, and certainly not leaving at this hour."
Childermas regarded him carefully, before slowly lowering himself back into the armchair.
"I have told you, Mr. Childermas, you are always welcome at Staircross."
Segundus leaned forward in his chair.
"I have only tonight said how much you do for us here. The room will be kept as yours for as long as you have need of it. I had thought that I had... I do apologize if I had not made myself clear before."
There was something odd in Childermas's face, something difficult to read in the twist of his mouth and the crease of his brow.
"Of course," Segundus continued, blushing as he realized that perhaps Childermas would prefer to spend his time elsewhere. "If you would rather stay at the Hart, then do not let me pressure you, but your company is greatly appreciated here. By me, and the staff are always so happy to see you, so you need not spend money unnecessarily unless you prefer. My hospitality will take no offense." He knew himself how it felt to think yourself living on someone else's charity, how uncomfortable it could become. He did not wish that for Childermas.
"Thank you, Mr. Segundus." Childermas's voice was low and rough. If Segundus had been harboring any secret hope that Childermas would, in fact, spend the night at the Hart, he was sure Childermas's penetrating gaze would have seen through him.
"It is kind of you. I was not overly impressed with the Hart last I stayed."
Segundus smiled, relieved, and sat back.
"As you are not riding away from us, can I offer you another brandy?"
Childermas gave a low rumble of laughter and offered his glass forward.
"Thank you, sir. I shall certainly sleep better here."
Glass refilled, he sat back in his chair with more ease, his legs stretching out before him to the fire.
"Although I will have to visit in the morning to retrieve Vinculus. He will be comfortable there for the night, although I doubt how well the other patrons will sleep."